It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is Rico Bronya. Welcome into another edition of the Rico. What else is new? The Mets lose another series, this time with a brand new manager in Andy Green, and the same crap. In fact, I could actually argue that some of the crap we witnessed, especially in game three of this series on Sunday, was actually worse than a lot of the crap we've seen throughout this season. We will talk about the game two victory. We'll talk about the game three loss. We'll read some of your emails, thericob@gmail.com. And yes, in another series loss, we will pick the Rico, I'm the man right now, and the net negative. I actually want to start at the end of this three-game series because what really pissed me off about Sunday's game, and I know, it's crazy. Why, Evan, would you be pissed off? The season is over. You've accepted the season is over. They've made the managerial change. We all know where this is going. So why, as you're on vacation at Niagara Falls and you're watching the Mets on DVR hours later in a hotel room, how could you possibly be annoyed or pissed off about something that happened in game three of this series against the Phillies? Here's why. And here's the difference between what happened in game three versus something we really didn't see a lot of during the regular season with Carlos Mendoza. The Mets didn't try to win. This manager, or this front office, since he's an extension of the front office, they didn't try to win. There were two, I think, egregious examples of this in this game. And I get it. Like, I turn on a microphone, I do a podcast, I go on WFN, and my opinion is this team stinks and is not going to make the playoffs, right? That's my opinion. I'm sure it's a very popular opinion. But that doesn't mean that on June 28th, you manage a baseball game and you play a baseball game as if it's March or as if it's February or as if it's September 20th and you've been mathematically eliminated. And the two egregious things that really annoyed me, number one is Lindor. And this one's obvious. I mean, my email box is filled with people saying, how do you not use Francisco Lindor in any one of like five different moments? Number one, you could argue Lindor needs to start. The Mets are coming off a victory against the Phillies on Saturday. Lindor played a huge role in that. There is not a lot of time left for the Mets to miraculously turn this season around. So despite him returning from a calf issue, and despite the fact that the Mets kind of skewed a traditional rehab process, maybe it makes sense against a division rival for Lindor to play again on Sunday. Okay, fine. You don't start him. That's, you know what? I disagree with who did play. Brett Beatty at second base, Bo Bichette at shortstop, and even Mark Vientos, of all people, getting to play third base. But you had so many opportunities in this game to use the magic bullet, to use Lindor in that one moment to try to change a game. And Andy Green decided not to. And I think it's more than just Andy Green. This was clearly an organizational decision. Ron Darling made a comment on the broadcast that when guys come back from injuries in this day and age in 2026, it just isn't as simple as, okay, you're in the lineup, go play. There's a lot of boxes that need to be checked. And I get that, and I respect that. I genuinely do. But I think, unfortunately, because of where the Mets are in their season, coming into this game at 13 games under 500, you're going to have to break some rules. So one of the rules you have to break, and you know, I'll go through all the different moments. What moment do you want to start with on where Lindor could have been used? And by the way, just before I get to all of them, if Lindor can only be used as a pinch hitter, that's the only way you can use him. So now I'm trying to be fair by editing these rules by saying, all right, I'll at least accept that he can only take one at-bat. He can't stay in the game to play shortstop. He can't do things past that. Well, then if you're Andy Green, you got to manage this game very differently and maybe not be as aggressive in pinch hitting for Eric Wagaman and Mark Vientos and Tyrone Taylor when you did. But clearly, it was told to Andy Green that Lindor cannot be used under any circumstances. Let me get my trusty book out, and we can go through all the different moments where the Mets could have used him. Let's see. Well, number one, when Wagamin was taken out after Jared Young pinch hit for Mark Vientos and A.J. Ewing pinch hit for Tyrone Taylor, one option was, okay, I'm going to take Wagamin out. I'll just insert Lindor. He'll be the shortstop and he'll back cleanup. So now Lindor is going to get one or two potential at-bats, definitely two at-bats. It's going to be in the cleanup spot where you've been hitting him anyway. And so you get a half off day for Lindor, maybe even two thirds of it a game off for Lindor. So option number one was after you make those defensive changes and you bring Ronnie Mauricio in the game, maybe you don't, and you go to Francisco Lindor. Option number two, when Mauricio started the seventh inning. Obviously, this goes back to option number one. If you don't go to Ronnie Mauricio, it's Francisco Lindor leading off the seventh inning of this game with the Mets down by a run. Okay, fine. You don't use him then. Let's go to option number two. How about when Brett Beatty, who sucks, by the way, we've all accepted that. Brett Beatty comes up with the bases loaded. Actually, I apologize. Second and third two outs after the non-Nick Jose Alvarado commits that defensive miscue on the A.J. Ewing infield hit. How about you use Lindor then? How about with second and third and two outs? And if they don't want to face Lindor, okay, I'll take my chances, I guess, with Luis Torrens with the bases loaded. But that's obviously the risk of using Lindor there. But how about Lindor for Brett Beatty, who's hitting 212? You could have done that. That's option number two. And then the egregious one. To me, this was the most egregious of when you could have used the bullet known as Francisco Lindor, was with the bases loaded and one out and Ronnie Mauricio up. Like, there's a fine line, and you're going to hear me talk about this, not just in this episode, but beyond, because, yes, the Ricos will continue throughout this lost season. There's a balance between evaluating a Ronnie Mauricio and trying to win a game. Okay, there's a balance. I want to evaluate Ronnie Mauricio. I'm going to take a lot of crap for this. I want to see the kid play. I'm certainly wanting to see him play more than Brett Beatty, who I think we've all determined is just not an everyday major league player. He's just not. Can he be a utility player at the major league level? Absolutely. I see a value in that for Beatty. I don't see it, though, as an everyday player. He's been given enough runway, enough opportunity. This season is that final straw. Doesn't mean you have to DFA him. Doesn't mean you have to trade him for nothing. But we can now at least cut from our brains the idea that Brett Beatty is an everyday third baseman or an everyday second base or whatever you want to call him. He's a utility player at best if he's in the major leagues. So I'm going to want to see a lot of Ronnie Mauricio. But with the bases loaded and one out and Lindor available off the bench, I mean, come on, man. You're 13 games under 500. You're trying, I think, to pull off a miracle and get back into this thing. You know, you win this game, all of a sudden, I shouldn't say all of a sudden, like something amazing is going to happen, but you win this game, you win a series, you're 12 under, you're facing a struggling Blue Jay team. All of a sudden, we have some belief in Andy Green that he knows his head ass from his elbow. And instead, you leave the bullet on the bench. And Ronnie Mauricio had an opportunity. He could have made us all eat those words. And what does he do after Orion Kerkering throws 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? How many out of the strike zone in a row? I think he had thrown 7 out of the strike zone in a row. And Ronnie Mauricio swings, which I didn't have a problem with. I don't have a problem with him swinging. I have a problem with him not executing. And he pops it up on the infield. Horrible. I mean, just horrible for Mauricio and horrible for anybody that still cares about the Mets winning games. Bases loaded, one out. Kerkering walks back-to-back guys on 9 pitches. And Ronnie Mauricio gets a pitch down the middle and he pops it up. And Andy Green after the game was... I've learned a few things about Andy Green. I'll get to it later. But he wasn't forthright on if Mauricio was given a take sign or had the opportunity there to get a pitch to hit and just drill it. Like, he really didn't tell us. He said that some guys have gotten take signs in this game. He didn't tell us who. He didn't tell us when. That to me isn't necessarily a moment where I would tell Ronnie Mauricio to take, because with the bases loaded and one out and a fly ball to the outfield tying the game up, I'm trying to get a pitch to hit. Like, to me, I'm big on the take signs when you need base runners. When you're down by multiple runs late in the game, it drives me nuts sometimes when you see guys being uber aggressive. It's selfish. Like, what's the point? Great, you hit one up the alley. What does that do? You're down by multiple runs. So I've always been big on that's when I want to see guys take. Despite Kirkering struggling to throw strikes, you figure you're going to get a pitch to hit. He did get a pitch to hit. And you don't even need a base hit. You just need him to hit the ball to the outfield. That's all you need. You get that, the game is tied. And instead, Mauricio pops it up. So number one, I start this, Rico, by telling you I got the impression that their lack of usage with Lindor told me they didn't care much about winning this game. But there are more examples. Example number two is Kodai Senga comes into this game, and obviously the Mets did the whole opener bulk thing where they're trying to catch everybody by surprise. They have Cionel Perez start this game, does a great job. And Tobias Myers was not really good. And I thought with Myers, this game was managed to stretch his pitch count out more than it was to win the game. Because when Myers gets through the second inning, great. When he gets into trouble in the third inning at any point, knowing you're going to go to Senga, who's going to eat up a bunch of innings, are you not thinking to yourself, hey, maybe I should get Myers out of this game? Maybe I should try to keep this game close. The reason it isn't crazy, in my opinion, to use an A.J. Minter or a Brooks Raley, it wouldn't have been A.J. Minter, but a Brooks Raley or anyone else, an Austin Warren. The reason it's not crazy to use somebody early in the game to get out of a jam is that when you go to Senga, it's possible he's going to finish the game, as we ended up seeing. So I thought the way Myers was managed in the third inning also showed a lack of care in this game. It was more, hey, we really want to stretch out Tobias Myers, which I'm in favor of. I've said that for a while now that I would stretch Myers out. But I don't know if you can stretch him out at the cost of a game. And it felt with the way Green allowed Tobias Myers to get through that third inning. And look, eventually, to Myers' credit, he pitched a 1-2-3-4 as well. So he was able to at least extend his game into three innings. But I got the impression, I wasn't mad at this moment, I just got the impression that the priority was more on Myers' pitch count and stretching him out than it was trying to get a big out to win the game. And then you've got Kodai Senga. Senga was very mixed, the very mixed performance. He gets off to a good start. He gets into massive trouble in the sixth inning, second and third, nobody out. And to his credit, gets two big strikeouts and a ground out and doesn't give anything up. It's a great job by Kodai Senga. But then when they give him the lead on a 1-2 pitch to Schwarber where you cannot, why are you challenging Kyle Schwarber with a 1-2 fastball right down the middle? Why? You bounce the ghost fork. I don't care how many in a row he's fouled off. Bounce it. This is the best slugger in the sport, and you're challenging him with a fastball. This goes back to Mets pitch selection. This goes back to the coaching staff and how abysmal it's been. Like, that's a terrible idea. And Senga was asked after the game with his translator about it, and he basically is like, yeah, you know, you could always second guess it. Second guess it. How about a first guess of it? The one thing you cannot do when you're facing Kyle Schwarber with a one-run lead and ahead of the count 1-2 is to basically go after him with a fastball. That's just a bad plan. So Senga gives up the two-run home run, and it is fair to wonder in the seventh inning of a game that you just came back in, you've rallied despite all the negatives early in the game and all the missed opportunities and Tobias Myers struggling in that third inning despite all of that. You have the lead. And as much as Senga could continue to pitch because you used an opener and his pitch count is reasonable, aren't you trying to win the game? Brooks Raley is in your bullpen. He was available. He actually warmed up later in the game. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper are coming up. Why not go to Brooks Raley? There's one out. There's one on. You have a one-run lead. You know that Kodai Senga can implode. Why are you not going to Brooks Raley? Why not? Now, the Mets did not have a full complement of their bullpen. I acknowledge that. I don't think AJ Minter would have been available. Luke Weaver would have been available. But Devin Williams would have been available. Brooks Raley was certainly available. And you're trying to win the game. At least I thought you're trying to win the game. So that was another example where I thought the priority was Senga and seeing what he could do in this role versus, hey, I've got a one-run lead in the seventh inning and the Phillies have these two great left-hand hitters coming up. I don't know. Maybe I should play the matchups and try to win the game. I hated this. And I don't know, especially now, if this is Andy Green or if this is the front office. And look, we could sit here, and I know I will, and bitch and complain about individual managerial moves. And the argument back to me could be, well, they changed the manager, Ev. What do you want? I don't want anything. I'm just going to tell you when I don't like a move. All I'm looking for as a fan is wins. It's all I want. So I don't know if this is what we saw in Sunday's game was more of a directive from the front office since Andy Green was in the front office, or if this is just Andy running the show, but I hated a lot of the crap we saw on Sunday. Now, a quick aside on Andy Green. I'm going to defend David Stearns on one thing. On Friday, when he had his press conference to talk about Green being the manager, he dismissed the idea that he'd be the manager next season. I want to make clear that to me is all about Andy Green doesn't want the job. And we talked about this a little bit on the last Rico. I compared it to the Dick Cheney situation where Dick Cheney helped President Bush, Governor Bush at the time, look for a running mate and then came back and Governor Bush was like, how about you just do it? How about you just run as my running mate? Well, 8 years later, what do you know? I think that David Stearns was being respectful of the wishes of Andy Green to say he won't be the manager next year. That doesn't mean there isn't a scenario where Andy does a great job and David Stearns pulls a Governor Bush and says, hey, you know, you want the job? And maybe Andy changes his mind, but it is clear that Andy Green is not showing an interest in the job. He already came out and said he turned down interviews in the past for a managerial job. So let's just strike that one from the record because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. I'll tell you what does matter. I've watched two Andy Green press conferences now, maybe three, I guess. He uses a lot of words, and I don't know what the hell he's saying half the time. I really don't. Like, the first time he spoke, he said a couple of things. I was like, oh, that's awesome, man. That's great. That's inspirational. I like that. But now after games, I'm like, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. It's word salad. And I'm not annoyed by it. Not yet, at least. I'm giving everybody an observation that my 3 days into Andy Green being the manager observation is just a lot of meaningless words. That's what I got out of him. And you know what else I got? And this is not from his press conference. This is from watching the Mets and questioning, okay, will anything be different? There's a new manager. So I've seen a few things that are different. Like we saw Mark Vientos start at third base. We got a clear indication that Jared Young is his pet project and he's going to play a lot of first base. We saw the way he was going to construct this lineup with Lindor back. So I think from a lineup perspective, we saw some differences. But one thing I haven't seen, and I am disgusted by this, is the Mets' usage of challenges. It's still brain-dead garbage. You still see Francisco Alvarez challenging a pitch in the fourth inning, a 1-0 pitch. You still see Mark Vientos being uber aggressive in challenging pitches, even if he's right a bunch of the time. The Mets are continuing to show no like thought when it comes to when should we use the ABS challenge. But the challenge that pissed me off the most, and I'm going to remember this when we hand out our grades at the end of the season, for the A student Luis Torrens, in the ninth inning, with one out and nobody on, I think it was, he challenges a pitch that was clearly a ball and remained a ball, and it was the Mets' last challenge. So when they went to the bottom of the ninth inning, down by a run against one of the better closers in baseball, they didn't have any challenges. How does that happen? Like, they're supposed to be better than this.
when it comes to when you challenge pitches. And we continue to see the Mets over and over again now have these awful challenges. It was with Carlos Mendoza. It is now with Andy Green. Like, do they talk to these guys? Is there ever a conversation of, you know what? Let's pick the right moment. Let's be smart about when we issue challenges. Let's not do this at the stupidest time. I apologize. Hopefully we're back. I'm sorry. We're doing this from a hotel at Niagara Falls, so if there was an internet loss, my apologies. I tried to pay my bill. Anyhow, the challenges and when they're using them continues to be awful. It continues to make no sense. And I was hoping with a new manager that maybe when Andy Green is talking to the team for that first time, he'll throw in a, hey, can we be smarter with these challenges? Because the Alvarez challenge, Vientos's aggressiveness, and I'm not sure if I cut off before I said it, but Luis Torrens's challenge in the ninth inning where the Mets didn't have one left for the bottom of the ninth inning. I mean, that just can't happen. It's egregious. So real quick on the Sunday game, I thought Senga was okay. I think he was better. I think the future of Kodai Senga looks like this. Zach Thornton was great on Friday, and he deserves to remain in the rotation, but it was a numbers game to activate Christian Scott. They had no one to send down, and so Zach Thornton goes down. He needs to be down for 15 days, so we're probably not going to see him until after the All-Star break. It is going to force Senga to be somewhat in the rotation. Right, Christian Scott's here, Manaya's here, Nolan McClain, Freddy Peralta. The next turnaround, which they can skip with an off day, but once they eventually need a fifth starter, I would assume they're going to do the same thing they did on Sunday, which is maybe open with a Ciano Perez, maybe open with a Waskar Brazoban, or dare I say, even another one of the lefties, I doubt it though, in Minter or Raley, and then have Kodai Senga try to eat four or five innings. I think that's clearly what they're going to do. And then come second half, we'll see more of Zach Thornton. As far as Saturday's game is concerned, because I don't want to ignore the one victory we've seen the Mets have in a week and a half. Look, it was great. It was great to see the stars come through. I mean, that's one thing the Mets have been missing, and it's an excuse, but it's a real excuse, is that we just haven't seen Lindor and Soto and Bichette in the lineup at the same time. And so they go down 2-0 early when Christian Scott allows the home run to Bryce Harper. And Scott was okay in his return. Didn't go deep into the game. He was pulled early after only 82 pitches, which I guess has more to do with the fact that it was his first start off the injured list than anything else. And I thought Scott was okay. You know, it was fine. He made one mistake. And if he get that last out of the fifth inning or get two more outs in the fifth inning and get through five, I think five innings, two runs just sounds better than 4 1/3 innings, two runs. But the Met offense was doing nothing, much like it did nothing on Friday. It kind of continued on Saturday, and they finally broke through in that sixth inning. And give Francisco Lindor credit because he has been very quiet since his return, but he rips the two-run triple. They get the back-to-back walks. A.J. Ewing comes through. For some reason, Don Mattingly brought the infield in, which made absolutely no sense. And he pounds one up the middle for a two-run single. And then obviously you get Juan Soto hitting the triple in the seventh inning to break the game open. And the Met bullpen, which if I had to pick a strength of the team, like if you said, all right, Evan, what are they good at? It is their bullpen. Luke Weaver continues to be unbelievable. Devin Williams in a non-save situation, nevertheless, does a good job. Oscar Brazoban in a bounce-back effort after he lost on Friday. So Saturday was nice. It was cool. It was cool to see him win. That's my attitude. I never see them win anymore. We never see them win anymore. So when they win, it's like, oh, that was kind of cool. A couple of things I want to get to, because there's, besides the games, a few other things that need to be discussed, including the fan being removed for having a sign. I'll read this email from Joey, who writes, Evan, how do you feel about the Met fan being removed from the sign for having either a Fire Stearns or Stearns Out sign? So my answer to this, and I had this answer long before Steve Cohen decided to awaken and actually go on Twitter. When it comes to people being thrown out of games, whether it's holding a sign or whatever the reason, it's never as simple as a sign. If the man was thrown out for only having a sign that said fire David Stearns, we agree that's egregious. I would be skeptical that that's all that happened. I'd be skeptical that the security said, hey, and I'm not saying this happened. I'm throwing out why I wouldn't just jump to the conclusion of this is disgraceful, because I would assume did security go up to the guy and say, hey, you're blocking people's view, put the sign down. And the guy said, no, it's my First Amendment. Screw you. You know what I mean? So I don't know. But when I heard this story, my reaction was, I got to see the whole thing. Like, I, of course, if all he did was hold a sign and nobody was bothered by it and he got thrown out, that's disgraceful. But what annoys me is Steve Cohen going on Twitter to A, say, hey, the guy was obnoxious. Head of security told me. We warned him a couple of times. He was disrupting the fans' experience. That's fine. You know, Steve wants to finally come out for the first time in 3 months, not address the crap product, not address that, but just say, hey, I just want to clarify for anyone who's concerned, there's more to this story than meets the eye. Fine. But the thing that drove me nuts, and I took a picture of it because I was like, there's no way this guy actually did it. I mean, Steve Cohen. Steve, if you're listening, if you're a Rico supporter, sometimes you shouldn't tweet, because he responded to somebody who said, I'm going to read it to you. Someone writes, when are you going to talk? And Steve's like, I'll be speaking soon. Okay, a little bit of breaking news. Steve Cohen's going to actually answer some questions. And then in response to angry Mets Giants Knicks fan who tweets, we diehard fans do not deserve this. The amount of money that we spend on tickets every year is insane, especially when it's $50 for parking and there isn't a good team on the field. So changes need to be made this offseason in the coaching staff and the players. All right, fair tweet, pretty innocuous. But he's talking about the price and the parking. And Cohen writes, buy a prepaid parking pass and it's $40. Are you serious, bro? Like, this is not the time to be snarky, smartass, and not funny. This is the kind of tweet that when you're 30 games under 500, fine, I guess you can get away with. But the billionaire telling the genuinely angry Met fan who didn't say anything wrong in that tweet, $50 for parking, just buy a prepaid pass. It's only 40. First of all, do you think 40 is okay, Steve? Like, honestly, I know you're out of touch, but do you think 40 is reasonable? Is that what you're actually saying? That's number one. And number two, why would you even say this? I'm laughing because it's so absurd. Like, you want to go out there and say, hey, you guys don't have the whole story on the sign guy. I just want you to know we're not kicking fans out for saying fire David Stearns. We were kicking that fan out because he was obnoxious. Fine. Okay. I still would rather you talk about the crap product on the field, but okay. And then you throw in that guard. And you know what? He's definitely thinking to himself, oh, I'm funny. This is me. This is my sense of humor. This is my sarcasm. Dude, you're a billionaire talking to regular Joes and saying, just buy a prepaid parking pass. It's only $40. As if $40 is some kind of steal. Like, what are we doing? But that's all I have to say about this owner right now, because honestly, it's irrelevant till he says something. The other thing was the Athletic article about Met leadership. Will Salmon does a great job covering the Mets. And I always say, when a season goes bad, we'll always see that article talking about how, you know, there's a leadership problem. This happens in the locker room. I remember after 2023 when that happened, it kind of annoyed me because I was like, come on, is that really the reason why the team struggled? Same thing with last year. Like, oh, it's got to be locker room stuff, when it's not. Sometimes it's just baseball stuff. So the Mets fire Mendoza, obviously, on Friday. If you missed that edition of the Rico, go back and listen. We also talked about Friday night's game, if you care about that. And we've talked a lot about Mendy and this team and what's wrong with this team. There was one part of Will Salmon's article that I wanted to read to you and comment on. And if you haven't read it, you should. It's a good article. Athletic does good work, I must say. Though Mendoza deserves some blame for the Mets' mess, conversations with more than a dozen people within the organization spelled out how the state of the team reflects the danger of putting together a roster the way the president of baseball operations, David Stern, did, with so many new faces. While multiple Mets people said the players are not bad guys, one club source went as far to say that they didn't have a full roster doing whatever it takes to win. Added another person affiliated with the Mets, when you get new players, young players, old players, guys in contract years, their first year in New York, they're not doing well, they're focused on themselves. Interesting. Gary Cohen brought that up at the press conference to David Stearns, where he said, do you think, you know, taking a bunch of guys, a bunch of new players and throwing them together is that a concern? And I could see that. Like, I could see how that would be something that makes it difficult in that room. And Salmon also talked about how there were no players-only meetings. There were no guys standing up saying, hey, I'm going to ream the team or try to pump up the team, and that Juan Soto doesn't lead in that way, and Francisco Lindor didn't do it. And I go back to a point that Tiki made on our radio show, and it's speculation, but it's very interesting. And it goes back to when Steve Cohen, I guess I'm mentioning the owner again, sorry. When Steve Cohen did that whole thing about we'll never have a captain. And I didn't think it was a big deal. I remember here on the Rico, whether Lindor was the captain or not, I never thought it was a huge deal. So I am clearly Monday morning quarterbacking here. But Cohen said, I'll never have a leader. And Tiki made the comment the other day that it basically, it just cut Lindor's balls off. Like, if Lindor was the leader, and it felt like he was in 2024, if he was the leader of the team, to have the owner come out and say, I'll never have a captain over my dead body, did it almost, I don't know, kind of just neuter Francisco Lindor? I don't think we'll ever get an honest answer from really anybody, maybe until Lindor's out of baseball, maybe until he's a former Met. I think it'll be a while. But an interesting point that Tiki made, because the team lacks leadership. I don't know if that would have made a difference. I don't know if it would have saved this team at any point. I don't know if having more camaraderie in the room from guys that have been around would have made a difference. But I don't know. 2023 leadership, 2025, it always comes back to the same stuff, when sometimes the answer is mostly baseball. And I say mostly baseball because I don't want to say that none of this matters, but it is mostly baseball. When you go out to Citi Field and you have a good time, which did not happen on this homestand because they went 1-6, you know, you can celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser, light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. I'm actually going to Monday's game up in Toronto. Me and the family are at Niagara Falls, but beautiful. I had never been in Niagara Falls. I've been to a lot of places in this great country. I had never seen it. It was spectacular. The town, leaves a lot to be desired, but the actual falls, gorgeous. And Toronto's only an hour and a half away. And it's one of those baseball stadiums I have never seen. I have a list, I think we all do kind of secretly, the list of stadiums we've been to. I've been to about, I have it written down. I guess I could look, but I think I'm at 22 of the 30 active stadiums. So not bad. Pretty good little run. But Toronto, oddly, is one of the stadiums I have never seen. So Monday night, when it's Trey Savage against Sean Manaea, we will be in the building. I have not decided yet if we're going to do a cross-the-border drive-home Rico. I guess we'll see how it goes. But the Mets do get set for three games against the Toronto Blue Jays. Let me get to some more of your emails, and then we will pick the I'm the man right now. Rico, I'm the man right now, star of the series. And also a net negative, because, yes, there's a net negative when you lose a three-game series again, that's for sure. This is from DS. DS writes, Evan, love the Rico. It's a therapy session. I need but really don't want it, especially during the year. If you squint hard enough, you can see David Stearns' vision in Saturday's game. Homegrown pitcher with great upside on the mound. Number two, top sixth in the lineup are a combination of very promising rookies. Benj Ewing, All-Stars future Hall of Famers, Soto Lindor, a potential diamond in the rough, Jared Young, and a guy who, if he opts in, could certainly be part of the solution, Bo Bichette. And number three, a lockdown bullpen. Still not sold on the current second baseman catcher in DH. Obviously, it's only the most likely meaningless game, but I can get behind the vision whenever baseball resumes. What do you say? I don't think I would say the vision. I would say that the Mets have some young players and some veterans that are worthy of building around. EJ Ewing, who we will talk more about, especially when we get to the I'm the Man right now, had a great series and has a chance to be a really good player. Carson Benj, oddly enough, I know his numbers aren't great. I think he's had a really good rookie year. And maybe it's because those numbers are tilted because he got off to such a bad start. But you've seen the growth of Carson Benj. I mean, his ability to hit left-handed pitching is awesome, especially for a guy that's barely been in the major leagues. And we all know how good Soto Lindor are. So I wouldn't call that the vision of David Stearns. I would just say, yeah, the Mets they've got guys worth building around. This is from NV. NV writes, to you, Hoff, and everyone else that's trying to say Pete Alonso really wouldn't have changed this season. 14 of the Mets' losses this season were by one run. It's actually 15 now. Do you really think Alonso would have been able to flip at least half, if not all, of those games? If he flips half those games, they're one game over 500, having not had Lindor basically all season. If he flips 10 or more, they're fighting with the Braves, not being healthy, and we're talking about how we could win a World Series. David Stearns ruined this organization, and don't look now, but that farm system that seems so deep is looking like a kiddie pool right now. Disgraceful. I guess that's the point of war, right? War is designed to tell you how many wins a player would have added. Now, we know how flawed it is because the eye test will tell you how flawed it is, but it's a fair question. All right, so Pete Alonso's back. All right, the Mets keep him. Do they also sign Bo Bichette? Probably not. So I think we have to factor that in. Where are the Mets? I partially agree with you, Envy. I think there's a few more wins. I cannot say there's 10 more wins. I can't say that. I can't say 8 of those wins are flipped. It's an impossible thing to figure out. But what I have said for a while is that, yes, Alonso being here would have helped, especially the reliability of him playing every day. And even just, I know no one's confused him with Rico Bronya defensively, but the certainty of a guy that knows how to play the position versus Mark Vientos, who's learning, Jared Young, who's learning on the fly. So I don't think there's any doubt the Mets would have been better. How much better? I can't say they'd be above 500. I think that's extreme. They'd be better, yes. But a big part of why this season has gone to hell is not just the guys that were signed to replace a Pete Alonso or a Brandon Nimmo. It's that Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos and David Peterson and Kodai Senga, guys who are here and are supposed to at least be better than last year, have gone completely backwards. This is the other controversy we need to address. So we hit on Steve Cohen with social media, right? We got to that. We got to the sign situation at Citi Field, where I think we could all agree you should be allowed to call for anybody's job if that's what you want, but you can't disrupt the other fans in the building if that's what's going on. How about the Mr. Met controversy? Tom in West Orange writes, I may be overreacting. Perhaps as I climb into my 40s, I'm growing crotchily, but I cannot express the level of rage I felt after seeing Mr. Met's dumb baseball head dance in the background of Steve Gelb's report on Carlos Mendoza's firing. What is going on? This is an SNL level of absurdity. Of all the days, what could the guy under the baseball hat think Steve was talking about? I know nothing of the mascot world, but I feel like knowing the news and vibe around the team is the job description. I can't believe this organization is making me say these words unironically, but they need to suspend Mr. Met. And I don't just mean the guy who can't read the room, but the actual mascot might need to take a home stand off. Listen to this ridiculous stuff this team has me saying. I hate them. All right. So for those that are not aware, I will explain it. Steve Gelbs was doing a report prior to the Met game on Friday talking about Mendoza being fired. Obviously, it was the biggest story. And whoever was dressed as Mr. Met started dancing ridiculously behind Steve Gelbs as he is talking seriously about Mendoza. Now, we have seen mascots dance before behind the reporter, but usually it's fun. And the reporter will turn around, they'll laugh, it's a whole thing. The timing of this, I have to be honest, Tom. I'm sorry. I thought it was the funniest thing I've seen all year. I watched that video 15 times because, and I want to calm Tom down and anyone else who is really bothered by it. Carlos Mendoza is going to be fine. Okay. Carlos Mendoza is, I think, has a chance to be a good manager. I think it's very different than the way I felt about Luis Rojas. Like, I think Carlos Mendoza was actually at times a good manager. It didn't work here. It ended badly here. I don't even want to go back and talk about the badness. I think Mendy's okay, and he'll be fine. And Carlos Mendoza, I'm sure, disappointed it didn't work out, but he's texting people back. He's texting Gary Cohn 10 paragraphs. Thank you for your support. Mendy's good, right? So once we accept that this is not a man who's homeless now, who's going to be living on the street, like, he's good. He would probably laugh at this. Because Mr. Met's dancing like a jackass behind Steve Gelb's talking about his firing. Like, if he was talking about a death, or he was talking about like something genuinely more serious than a baseball move, I could understand the outrage. I just think it was hilarious. And yes, was it typical Mets? Sure. Oh, the Mets, as Joe Davis likes to say. Yeah, I would put it more on the side of comical than I would offensive. That's just me. Eric in Albany writes something, and I'm so glad he is the one to write this on June 28th, 29th, whenever you're listening to the Rico. Evan, would you agree the most important thing right now is finishing in the top six pick of the MLB draft? Since if we finish in the top six picks, we don't get penalized 10 spots for being over the luxury tax. All right. So for those that are not aware, because the Mets paid into the luxury tax, unless they're drafting in the top six, they move back 10 slots. So if they're picking eighth, it's 18th, ninth, it's 19th. You know the whole thing. No, I am not a tanker. If I couldn't sit there rooting for the Jets to lose, I'm not going to do that in baseball. And there's a lottery. So we could sit here all day rooting for them to lose like I did with the Nets, which was depressing. And if the lottery doesn't work your way, you're moving back 10 slots. I cannot do that. I get the point, Eric. I respect the point that if this season is going nowhere, you may as well have a better draft pick. Totally get it. There is never going to be a game this season, I'm raising my hand in promise, where on the September 17th Rico, I'm like, man, I'm so glad they lost because got to get that top six pick. Like, I hope they do get a top six pick for your point, but I hope that happens via the lottery, not by, you know, they're better off losing. You know what I mean? So I'm glad you brought it up. You will not be the only person to bring that up, but I am not in favor of them losing. Sorry about that. All right, let's pick a Rico on the man right now, star of the series and a net negative. Our buddy Howard sent me all the stats, which I appreciate, but I also wrote down my own stats this time. I was very prepared. Let me give you some honorable mentions, and then we'll get to who's going to win it, because I think it's very, very obvious. Carson Bench had four hits in this series, drove in two runs, including a bunch against lefties. Soto obviously had the big hit. He didn't have the big hit. Lindor, I would say, had the big hit on Saturday. He had two hits in this series with two RBIs. Soto had two hits in this series with an RBI. Zach Thornton threw the ball really well on Friday. I thought Ciono Perez, give him a lot of credit. The two scoreless on Friday, and then he opens the game on Sunday to a scoreless inning. So three scoreless from Perez. But the clear on the man right now is A.J. Ewing. What a great weekend for A.J. Ewing. He had a hit on Friday. He had two hits on Saturday, including the game winner, the two-run single. And then he hits the pinch hit two-run home run that tied the game on Sunday. And he also had two hits. He ends up going 5-for-9 in this series with a home run and four RBIs. And for the very first time, we get to say, A.J. Ewing, you are the man right now. So honorable mention of all those other guys, but I think that's clear cut. A.J. Ewing, you are the man right now. The net negative, oh my God, there's so many options. So many options. We could go with, we could go with Brett Beatty. He never hit in this series. He did draw a bunch of walks and came up small in some big moments. We would go with Francisco Alvarez, who had some of the most atrocious at-bats you'll ever see and went 1-for-10. We could go with Luis Torrens going 1-for-6, but allowing that double steal in the third inning in which he couldn't get the ball out of his hands and probably should have thrown it to second base. I think those are all really good options. We could go with Waskar Brazoban. Hate to pick on Waskar, but of course he's the one who got the loss in Friday's game. Could pick him. Could go with Tobias Myers, giving up three runs. But if we are being honest to the net negative name, we're not talking about how much money they're making. We're not talking about if they're a prospect or not. We are looking at the mere negativity of what someone brought to a series. The answer to this question is Ronnie Mauricio. He had five at-bats. He went 0-for-5. The one game he didn't play in was Saturday, the game they won. He comes up with the bases loaded and one out in the spot where they don't use Francisco Lindor, and he pops up in the infield. So all those other options are fine, and Alvarez was actually the other guy when you talk about some of the bad at-bats that he had over the weekend that I was strongly considering, but I think it's Ronnie Mauricio. With that said, I want to play Ronnie Mauricio. And here's my argument that will get some of you on my side. Brett Beatty or Ronnie Mauricio? If you have a choice, and I'm talking about starting games. Look, late in the game, you have a chance to win the game. Fine, go to the bench. I don't think Ronnie Mauricio needs to be protected from any pinch hit opportunity. But we've seen enough of Brett Beatty. Now, I think Brett Beatty is showing his value of being able to play numerous positions, and I think he plays second base and third base pretty well. Outfield, eh. But he's not hitting. So I want Ronnie Mauricio to continue to play. They're going to face two righties up in Toronto in Trey Savage and Kevin Gausman. I'd play in both games. I got no problem with that. Mark Vientos, you're not playing. Eric Wagaman, especially against the righty, you're not playing. I would play Ronnie Mauricio. And honestly, I'd play him at second base, and that would be over Brett Beatty. That's how I would do it. But he had a bad series. So two things can be true at the same time is my point. He's the net negative, and he may win a bunch more net negatives, but he needs to play. And for those asking, well, why? Why? What do you see in Ronnie Mauricio? I don't even think at this point it's what you see. I think it's just to get a real answer on him moving forward, he needs to play. I think we have our answers on Brett Beatty. We have our answers on Mark Vientos. I think we are going to now need an answer on Ronnie Mauricio. So coming up, the Mets go to Toronto. The Blue Jays are on a losing streak. I am not going to play this game of, oh, the Mets have to win all three, or they got to do this, or they got to do that. Look, they're 14 games under 500. The season is a bad one. I am still watching every game hoping they win, hoping that we're like doing a drunk Rico in the middle of July saying, can you believe it? They've won 11 in a row. It's amazing. But obviously, I don't expect that to happen. Manaea, McClain, Peralta up in Toronto. And we'll see if the Mets can get something going. I doubt it, though. And what's crazy about this season? They really haven't played well for any extended period of time. Like, I was going through their season and saying, when have they been the hottest? And there's really only two, like, mini stretches this season where the Mets played well. They won 7 out of 10 at one point, and then around the Yankee series, they won 6 out of 7. Outside of that, it's just been so mediocre and so bad. But as we march towards the All-Star game, Toronto and Atlanta, and believe it or not, this is the final road trip the Mets have before the All-Star break, which is kind of nuts. They go to Toronto and Atlanta, and then they wrap it up at home against two lousy American League teams, the Royals and the Red Sox. And then that schedule out of the All-Star break is insanity. It really is. If you haven't heard it yet, I'll do it real quick. Philly, Milwaukee, LA, Atlanta, Miami, and Cleveland. I mean, basically all teams that are playing reasonably good baseball. So that could get ugly. But we do appreciate you listening to the Rico Bronya, as I've done this from Niagara Falls. You can email us your thoughts, therico@gmail.com. We'll obviously try to get to your emails. We always give you Ricos at the end of each series like this one and maybe a pop-up instant reaction. So subscribe to the Rico Bronya and you will never miss an episode. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on another depressing edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.